Welcome to Space Force, everybody, to the season finale of our show. I'm Jason Tondro.
I'm Jim Sales.
And I'm Stu Aidsmith.
And listen, I hope everybody out there is doing okay and is safe and healthy. We're all cooped up in the same house where we're all, you know, we're all there together, separate in our own ways. We live close together and we live far apart in the immortal line from Susan Glasspool's Trifles. But we're all kind of experiencing the same thing. And we just hope that everyone out there is doing all right. In the meantime, we can provide some entertainment for you and some good news, because the entire first season of Picard is now free. You do not have to pay anything to watch the show now. If you were like, oh, I don't want to pay $3.99 or $5 or whatever a month to watch my Star Trek, well, the answer is you don't. So you can turn on CBS All Access and watch this show for free. And it's pretty great. So you should watch it. And then come back and listen to us as we walk you through the episodes. Well, so we all had the season finale, and I think we've all watched the episode. It was pretty exciting, wrapped up all of our plot lines. The mysterious threat from outside the galaxy appeared, and our heroes succeeded in defeating it. That's our recap for today. We won. So what did you guys think?
Okay, go on, Jim. You go first.
I liked it. There's a couple things that I've been very vocal about on Twitter that I did not care for.
Tell us. Do not follow Jim on Twitter. He is JimSeal1701. Mm-hmm. And you should follow him on Twitter, but he's going to
tell us. Patrick on COVID nonsense.
Yeah, tell us.
So for me, it was the visual laziness of having a sky beam.
Yeah.
The Telltale Marvel Comics finale Skybeam, plus the Hell portal opening up and the Doc Ock / Matrix style tentacles that came out.
Yeah.
Like that whole small little section.
Yeah.
In terms of coming up with something new, like a new. There was a quote by Tom Breville, who's an editor at Marvel Comics. Like, he doesn't ever want to see Spider-Man holding up a heavy thing again. that was a very classic issue. It's been referenced for 50 years, and now I feel like we're just referencing these visual tropes that it's like, oh, we have a sky beam, imminent threats coming. Like, it's just shorthand, and I understand the episode had a lot of ground to cover, yeah. And so much of it was well thought out and nuanced that when you get to these visual shorthand cuts, I'm just like, it's tantamount to the villain who gets kidnapped in the hope of following his plot. Like, I've seen it so much that I don't care anymore, and you're not giving me anything new on top of that.
Right.
So I was a little disappointed by that. So it gets a couple marks down for me, just on those sort of three. And it's in like 10 minutes of the episode. It's only in like this short little window in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you could have done something else. Like, you could have come up with something as inventive as the Orchids that bring down a ball cube.
Right.
And you did it. And I'm just kind of like, you have that kind of like wild imagination heel. And then on this end, it's like Marvel Comics Skybeam. And
a little lazy.
Yeah.
A little lazy. Yeah. Anything else?
Overall, I like the episode. It did not do what I wanted it to do, but I think it did what it needed to do.
Okay. So go back and tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I wanted Data to come back.
Right. Yes. And those of us that have been listening to the show
That since episode one. I wanted Data to come back in some way, shape, or form in terms of like macro sense, it'd be more of like a Spock like reunification project thing. Well, it was something that we knew was happening, but we didn't necessarily have to deal with in terms of him leading the people, you know, the sense people. And that was always sort of my grand sort of idea. But in this, they did the opposite, which is, I think, you know, I lost that bet, but I think better in terms of it actually put a punctuation to the Data sentence fragment. So it actually gave him an end that was suitable for the character, because the one thing Data struggles with on the show is the fact that he can possibly outlive everyone. Like, he has no end date. And so, like, constantly these refrains on the original Next Generation TV show were Data comments that he's probably going to outlive everyone that he knows.
Right.
Okay. So.
So, here it comes.
Right. This is, it is kind of an episode of two halves for me, this one.
It was what?
An episode of two halves.
Okay.
It was the saddest, heartfelt episode of the series, yeah, and also probably one of the most disappointing in the end of the actual way they did the story.
Really?
Yes. Okay. I find. I mean, the scenes with Data and Picard, that was devastatingly brilliant. It was really well put together. Seeing Data age and kind of like, you know, basically, kill himself effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, with everything going on at the moment, obviously, it's, yeah, you can't help but feel for people, and it's kind of like, it just pulls them heartstrings. It's like, oh my God, this is really, really bad. Yeah, the devastating stuff, you think about all this kind of stuff. But then you get to like the actual parts of the storyline. It's like, okay, so number one, you win a no prize because you've got the whole Picard Golem thing going on. So, that one.
A no prize is an accurate title for this award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just like, okay, I agree with Jim that the idea of like this, I would have liked to have seen one of the aliens come through so that the Federation and Romulans could have maybe joined together to defeat that one, and then it got closed because it could give some reason for them to be there. Them just staring at each other going, yeah, okay, this, that was really annoying. But my biggest annoyance was all of the other synths on the planet,
yeah,
right, they literally just became cardboard cutouts because none of them did anything apart from the ones we've already spoken to.
Yeah.
So they have no personality. So like the idea, even like last episode when they were saying like, you know, they were trying to rally them up to destroy the organics, none of them said, oh no, Data wouldn't want this. They were kind of, oh yeah, we'll just go along with it. And they all just stood there and they just cut. So none of them had any kind of, it's almost like a hive mind effectively working on. They had no kind of objection to it whatsoever. They just went with the rush. And in this episode, they effectively, apart from the two guys with the kind of the spears, they effectively stood around and did nothing. They also didn't seem to display Data's strength because they should have kicked the crap out of him, whereas Soji did. So that was odd as well. But the biggest thing that annoyed me more than anything about it is that we're right at the end of it, where kind of like the whole thing's wrapped up and they're all kind of chatting away, and Soji kind of goes to him, oh yes, and the Federation have now let the synth ban lift. And you go, what? The synth ban that was saying, well, if you let them go, they're going to release an intergalactic thing that's going to come and destroy the universe. Oh, they did that. Oh, the others won't think to do that again, of course, so we'll let them back in. That just seemed to be like a nice tight bow to wrap around it. They could have explored that in season two, where they kind of got gradual representation for Picard and all this kind of stuff or whatever. That would be something I'd like to see expand upon. It just seemed to me it was just kind of like, oh, and everything's back to normal, kind of like the old G.I. Joe kind of a cartoons, but again, everything's great. That bugged me.
So first off, I want to note that although we never announced that we're doing these shows, we now have an audience. So Yogi Donnie, Paul Malchow are now hanging out and watching and making comments. Thank you, guys. Glad you enjoy the show. Welcome aboard. I was struck, Aid, by your observation last week that you were wondering what kind of cliffhanger were they going to end this episode in? And the answer is none.
Yes. Yeah.
There is no cliffhanger. And that obviously frustrated you. Like, you kind of wanted to see what was going to come next, but I was really glad. I guess I'm the odd man out. I love this episode. I thought it was great. Now, there were some elements that I did think were disappointing because I really wanted a colossal space battle.
Glad they avoided the colossal space battle.
Okay, well, there you go. Like, you can't please everybody, and here's a good example.
But, yeah. Like,
but we got
that so much. Like, all of Trek in the since Nemesis, maybe even like since Nemesis, most of Trek has focused on giant space battles. And showing that all technology is so much better than model ships, that we've gotten away from coming up with creative solutions to problems. It's just like, I've got the big ol' phasal, I have the big ol' ship, I'm gonna smash into you. Like, it's just like toys. And I love playing with my toys, but literally that's all Star Trek has been sort of reduced to. So the idea that we got out of the finale without a giant space battle, for me, actually is a benefit and not a detractor.
Okay, so featured on a bug. The closest we got was the battle between the Romulan warbirds and the Orcids. which was a cool little, you know, 30 seconds or minute or so of eye candy.
And it did look good.
It did look good. It did. Yeah. I found it hilarious that Picard and Girardi use technobabble to stave off the Romulan fleet, right? Like they have like the fancy gizmo that they got from the planet, and we have no idea what it does. And so the answer is it does whatever the plot requires.
It's an omni gadget.
It's the Doctor Sonic screwdriver. I mean, it's what it is. Like,
if Girardi had opened her mouth and said, "We're going to reverse the polarity through the deflector dish,"
it would be like an A plus episode.
It would have been no different. It was exactly that moment, right? And I thought that maybe it's just me, but I've been seeing kind of a lot of commentary throughout this season that's kind of referring back to Blade Runner a little bit, with the notion of synthetic life and kind of what does it mean to be human, and the observation that death is what gives humanity, that death is what gives life meaning, and that we are never more human than in our ability to die. That seemed to me to be echoing that, and also Star Trek II. I mean, this is what made Spock quintessentially human, right? Was his self-sacrifice. And I admired the show for the courage to not bring back Data. It was sort of an observation like, hey, ever since All Good Things, we've had this plot hanging out there that Data could come back. And we're going to put it away. We're going to put that plot away. And I respected that. And I thought it was a little gutsy. And I'm always a fan of things that are gutsy.
Well, it's not so much that we had this plot, right? So we had, essentially Nemesis happened, and then we left the 24th century. We just completely left the Borg era.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, we went back to, pre-Kulk era with Enterprise. We've done more pre-Kulk era with Discovery. We did the Kelvin vaults. Like, we've never actually revisited Data outside of ancillary material, where they did bring him back in one of the books as a synthetic life form. And also in the comic, the Star Trek Countdown comic, they brought him back and put him on Captain of the Enterprise. And all we got was a line that Spock helped out. No explanation whatsoever. Spock helped out. So it wasn't so much that we had this plot thread. I really think that for me, the spark of the plot was the idea in the first episode when they said, all you need is one piece of his bio, his positronic brain. Like, and once that was put in there, like, for me, that was like, all bets are on the table. We're going to get Data back.
Right.
Like, that was my rallying cry. That was my focus. But also, to your point, in terms of how we face death, Riker makes that comment in the worst episode of Next Generation when he's been stabbed with the branch and he has the clip show. It's Shades of Grey.
That's the Riker Bottle episode, right?
Yeah, and it's the Riker Bottle episode. And he makes the joke. And someone comments on his sense of humor, and he goes, well, how we face death is the most important test of a human. Like, Next Generation's never shied away from that as a concept.
I think it's kind of an overarching Star Trek theme, right? How we face death is at least as important as how we face life. Wouldn't you agree, Commander, right? Isn't that Spock to Savick on?
That's Spock to Savick,
Well,
those scenes were fantastic.
Yeah, you like that.
I mean, that was like, oh my god, that was just tears streaming, everything. That was devastating. Yeah,
I was disappointed by O. This is touching on AIDS point, I think. Like when the two fleets are basically just staring each other down. O basically said, okay, point all of our weapons at that thing and blow it up about four different times. And she was just no credible threat compared to Riker. Like when Riker shows up, it's like a.
You mean the best part of the show?
Yeah, it was pretty damn good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That happened, and I applauded.
Good. Yeah. And he looked good too, by the way. Did you notice? Like he got a haircut and.
He did get a haircut. He trimmed the beard. Yeah. He was leaning. He did the Riker lean. It was Riker. Great.
Yeah.
All he needed to do was stand up and put his leg on someone else's console inappropriately, and it would have been like 20 out of 10.
And he was like such a badass in that moment. Like, I got the biggest ship in the fleet, and I got 200 of them, and I would like nothing better than to kick your ass. And O was just so monotonous and flat. I didn't. She was much more menacing in previous episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than she was here, and it was a shame because I thought it was a little bit too one-sided of a conflict there.
Yeah, and it sort of echoed back to one of the cornerstone episodes of Picard, which is Data's Day, which is the episode where he's recording the log to Maddox, and that's where they're transporting a Vulcan ambassador who winds up being a Romulan, and right. There's a scene where Riker goes, "Charming woman," and he sort of marches off. After like the Vulcans dressed him down, and Data makes a comment about how he thinks Commander Riker's being disingenuous. So, you know, as a longtime fan, I felt like, okay, he's finally getting his comeuppance for that dressing down he had in that one random episode of TNG.
Nice.
The thing that annoys me a little bit about this is, first of all, the Romulans are right straight away. They were proved correct. They had a vision that the bad evil androids were going to send something through to planet and was going to kill people. If someone didn't stop it, they were correct. So the entire organization, they may have gone at it about a brutal way. They were going to kill all the androids or stop all the androids progressing. But technically speaking, they were correct. They predicted a destroyer. They got a destroyer.
Well, just
didn't take off.
I mean, I don't know if Soji. I mean. In order for that to be true, Soji would have had to reach Capellia, like without Picard.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the
whole prophecy thing of like there will be an android uprising, they will try and destroy it. I mean, like I say, they just capitulated so quickly to like, oh, we're going to destroy. Yeah, okay, everybody is going to destroy. It's like, oh my Christ, okay. The weird thing is, what the hell was Maddox's plan? I have no idea what that part of the thing. Who was her mother? Was that a CGI thing? Is it an actual person? All that is so vague now. It's like, yeah. What?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. This might be a good time to bring up. Apparently, Michael Chabon did a Q&A about the season, answering some questions and resolving some plot elements. Jim found this for us, and we'll include a link to it in the show notes. But there was there were some things that got skipped over or left on the cutting room floor, including a little bit more explanation of how Maddox and Free Cloud and everything worked into it. But apparently, Maddox had Soji and Dosh on Free Cloud, and that's where he altered their programming and then sent them out on their respective missions. And they had this sort of, in case of emergency, trust Picard programming going on. But we still don't really know what that was or what the hell Maddox thought he was doing.
Yeah, we don't know what the mission is. For me, it would have been more interesting had the woman, the holographic woman, and I presume it's just a program, right? I presume it's just the sleep program that has the backup failsafe, contact Picard in case of trouble.
Yeah.
It would have been more interesting had Maddox used Jurati's face.
Yeah.
And then the entire time we could have been wondering, like, why is this other thing happening? And then once we find out that they were in a relationship, like, it makes more sense.
Interestingly also, speaking of that image, that program of that Dosh and Soji see of their childhood, we never really had that face resolved. Of her father never turns into Soon or Maddox.
There wasn't actually an actual revelation as such. Everyone just assumed as soon as he pulled up that was who he was referencing. Yeah, obviously the other thing is obviously all the orchids obviously being there were the orchids in the space. Concealed by the orchids. It's like the space orchids.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
The orchids will protect you. Like a direct line in the previous episode.
Interesting.
But it's, I mean, like you said, the stuff about free space would have been nice to include somewhere along the line, because it does kind of make an idea, but just I don't get the plot, which is kind of a worry. It could like the whole Romulan thing makes sense in this, in the respect of like, okay, we want to put, but it's like, what did they want to do? Is it because did they just want to reintegrate him back into society again? And they, I don't really know.
Well, I mean, in the Q&A that Shaban gave out, and I know it's sort of like it becomes apocrypha data, like it's not in the episode, so we can't really judge it on its merits, is that he does comment that the Romulans had the prophecy before they had the admonition.
Right.
So the admonition just kind of fit into it. So when Narek is recounting the story, it's not a one-to-one ratio. Like, it's not as clean cut as if everything had like a parallel, like, oh, she actually did, you know, have a drum at some point, right?
Yeah, they had this belief already about these two figures, mm-hmm. and they sort of mapped the admonition onto it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
the most interesting thing about that, and I don't like the CBS app on my computer, mainly because it rewinding is not a thing. As Narek comments, it was before ancestors arrived at Vulcan.
That's right.
Indeed. Yes.
So my curiosity is, we only hold the Vulcan side of the story.
Yeah.
Like, what's the Romulan propaganda machine that's been working for the last several centuries? Like, what is that? You know, sort of like, did they just like, all the Vulcans to them like exile? Like, they just dropped them off and they kept going on their nomadic ways. Like, that's sort of like one of the things that sparked my interest in the episode, was just the tone of phrase. It was so alien that when I heard it and I saw it on the TV, I couldn't actually comprehend it, because it was so not what we know in canon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
then I realized, that's Spock who's raised the Vulcan way. That's not the Romulan version. No Romulans ever told us that story.
Yeah, and Narek also said it's history. So does that mean the Romulans had AI way, 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 way back, and it was all put to scrap? Or the admonishment was originally there, I assumed that was either like the first thing through the portal, effectively, and they found it and they built the plants around it, and that's what it. But that seems to be like, I don't know what that was. Is that, how did they get that image? What, where did that come from? I'm completely misunderstanding stuff. Doesn't seem to look up nicely.
This is how I understand it, because the admonition, once it gets interpreted through Vulcan mind meld and the synthetics can understand it more clearly, is that this outside group, which apparently in Michael Chabon's headcanon is called Alterity. The Alterity is the synthetic federation that spans galaxies. The Alterity created the eightfold star system and placed this message there, apparently leaving it for synthetics to find, and I guess not caring that organics would find it first, because it would just drive them all crazy, so who gives a shit?
That's the only explanation I can think of.
That means that the Alterity has come through the Milky Way galaxy at some point to do this. Presumably they have also done it to other galaxies where there was no life yet. Basically just putting up a sign, and no one understands it until the synthetics arrive. And when the synthetics do arrive and they understand it, they're like, okay, now you can call us in and we'll come rescue you and merge you into the Alterity, and you will join the greater galactic civilization of synthetics. And I guess that's the plan.
I think
Aide's point of contention is this whole story doesn't exist without Bruce Maddox, and Maddox's motivations are at best ambiguous.
Very much so.
Like, we needed at least a line of dialogue to say, like, I know we got the line of dialogue saying that he was treacherous from Alton soon, but we needed the line to say, okay, this is what he was hoping to do. He failed in his mission. would have taken to at least solve this sort of weird ambiguity, because the entire story is predicated on Maddox breaking away, going to Free Cloud, setting up a base, taking two of the Daedals with them, because the Daedals have to have memories of Coppelius.
Yeah.
Programmed in them.
Yeah.
And then activating them and sending them off on these two missions that don't relate to each other in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but like you said last week, the idea they send one to the Borg cube. It's like, but why?
Yeah.
What's the reason? It would make more sense if it, like, one of them was out there looking for the actual the eightfold planet system. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. It's like, okay, you need to find it first. It's like, no, you just go to the Borg cube and eventually you're walking Romulans. They might tell you one at one point in time. It's like such a weird thing.
Yeah. Or if they were just trying to research the Mars attack. Like, even if it was just that, even if it wasn't like a recontact situation, it was just like, we just need to know what happened here. Like, why did the synths break away? Why did they destroy a whole planet? What was that about?
Yeah.
Like, we have a new planet of synthetics. Let's make sure it doesn't happen again. Like, even if just that line of dialogue, we've done it.
Okay, Yogi Donny on the comments has just said it's a Mass Effect plot line. He's very much correct. It is the plot line for Mass Effect, the RPG. Where effectively it's like lots of aliens come down, destroy the universe, and then bog off and come back 10 years later and come back again later on.
Maybe, but that's not what I see. I don't see the Alterity as having destroyed the galaxy in the past.
Well, Narek said that it's happened once before. So does that mean they did it before, or did they destroy synthetics?
I don't know. When Narek says it's history, I think he means my mythology is history. I don't believe him. I guess I just don't take him at his word when he says this is history.
Yeah, yeah, and this is the problem we're talking franchises that have got many, many episodes that link supposed to link together. When someone decides to do that and say, oh, by the way, the galaxy destroyed lots of, or at least even just the idea that Romulans had technology so long ago and it all got destroyed, and it's, no one mentioned that in the other episodes. It's really difficult to kind of gel those things together. So like you say, it's easier to say he was just lying, and you go, yeah, okay, that's fine then, because it doesn't make a difference and it doesn't affect every other episode.
So I think AIDS, like, and correct me if I'm wrong, AIDS. I think your summation is when the episode is dealing with macro issues, like sort of cosmic importance and where things fit in, you felt the episode was disappointing. But when it focused on the micro, when it focused on the human being aspect of the episode, you felt it was heartbreaking?
Oh, Brit, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it's sort of like that the big picture, little picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, as I said before, the idea is similar to the Doctor Who episodes where like kind of like the Doctor solves it by everyone thinking really nice things. It was kind of like that. It was kind of like, hey, it all got wrapped up really, really nicely, and then we carried on. And you go, okay.
I did like how we had like an addendum to the Picard maneuver.
Yeah.
Like so, and I like the fact that Girardi only half-assed remembered it. Like, oh, it's the Enterprise, because that's what you're known for. And he's like, no, Stargate.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the other characters in the episode, because we hit on everybody, right? We've got Seven of Nine, we have Elnor, we have Raffi, we have Rios.
Apparently Raffi has Seven, and Seven has Raffi now.
Well, apparently so.
Where the hell did that come from? Not that exactly. I'm still like, I'm not opposed to the idea, but where the hell did that come from?
No, I agree. It's perfectly fine. It's kind of, it's similar to Star Wars Episode 2, where it's like Anakin Skywalker and Vader just get together because that's what the plot dictates. It's like they could have had some time together before, and if we see some actual scenes with them together, that would have been nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just weird. It was just a weird thing. It'd be nice to even if there was like a line dropped, rather than so that kind of like this. Oh yeah, we'll meet up or whatever, just to kind of explore it maybe next season or something like that. But it just seemed, a bit quick to start. Again, they have just saved the universe, so I suppose you got to kick back and relax a little bit. So,
well, my thinking with that was it was the writers trying to signal to the audience that Raffi's love for Picard is not a romantic love.
I think that
was the single boost of like, hey, she's got something else going on. She loves him like you love ideal friend. She doesn't love him romantically.
Well, I wasn't worried about that, so that was not necessary to do. But
I think some people might have been.
Okay.
Like, and because Bacall can't bring himself to tell Data that he loves him. Like, in that conversation, he nods when Data says it.
Right.
This like, even after all that he's gone through this season, he can't actually bring himself to say the words in the moment, in his last moments with Data.
Picard's inability to express his own emotions has become one of his defining characteristics. He can change almost anything else. He can recover from trauma. He can solve his heart condition. He can recover from permanent brain damage.
He doesn't have a heart condition.
That's true.
But he can't. But he cannot say "I love you," and that that's interesting. And I think that it puts a wonderful acting challenge on Picard, on Patrick Stewart, who has to convey the character's emotions, mm-hmm. while also conveying the character's struggle to convey his own emotions.
Mm.
Right? And I dig that. And I love that we've given that wonderful challenge. I don't want Picard to ever change that. I want him to be unable to say "I love you" to his dying day. Right? Yeah.
But he did in the last episode. He did say that to Raffi.
Right, yeah.
And then immediately walked away. And then when Rios tried to re-engage with him, he's just like, "I'm done. I'm emotionally spent. I don't have any more wherewithal."
In RPG terms, I'm out of fate points, right?
Yeah. I have no expendable currency to continue role-playing. I need to sit down.
Yes, I need a long rest.
But I think obviously the most important thing is, what does everyone think of Picard now being an android, effectively?
Yeah.
Oh, so I think I got the most heat last week when I said robot Picard.
Yeah, you did.
and here's the reason. Here's my fundamental thinking is going into the episode. Like, it was set up in the last episode. It's not the I don't think it's as much of the Deus Ex Machina as the magic wand is.
Yeah,
because Trek has a history of putting people's brains inside robots. Like, it's not new. We just lost that information, and we're just trying to rediscover it. For me, the issue was, Picard in particular has struggled with mortality.
Yeah,
like, I know those the I tell you not to start me on Star Trek Generations, and I'm going to start on Star Trek Generations. Because I feel that this is the closest we get to sort of the emotions that movie hits. And in that whole movie, Picard is notified in the very first act with him, very first scene with him, that his relatives are dead. Robert and Renee have died in a fire. And the whole movie is him grappling with mortality. And even before that, he's always sort of struggled with the fact that we know from other people's accounts, there was a John Luke before Jack Crusher died, and then there was the John Luke after Jack Crusher died.
Okay.
Because Robert comments like, "You were arrogant son of a bitch," right? Like, you were always number one. Like, he sounds more like the Captain Kirk that we sort of think we know from the parody of him.
Yeah.
Up until the point, like, Jack Crusher dies, and then he becomes a different person. Okay. Like, then he becomes emotionally aloof. Like, his best friend dies, and he shuts down that half of him, and he can't even bring himself to acknowledge how he feels to people, and people sort of have to intuit that, right? So the idea of putting him inside of a robot golem body, for me, was like, okay, you've just stripped him of one of his fundamental things. Is there are no more Picards outside. Like, he's the end of the line. Like, Jean-Luc is the last Picard with the family name. And then if you make him immortal, like, that's why I was thinking robot body. And then they fixed it with the Soon's line of, "Oh, relax, man. We were paying attention.
Yeah.
We have programmed an algorithm into your body that it will deconstruct on the, like, amorphous time when the show gets canceled."
Right.
When the show ends, Picard will also end. And once they established that line, and they did it with such flippancy, and no one else could have delivered it in that room better than Brent Spinal, who's just like, "Relax, man." Like, if that happened, I was like, okay, I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this new change. I can live with this.
Yeah, I did crow for about 24 hours that I guessed it right. But
you did. I got the text to prove it.
But what I really was surprised by and what I admire about it was that the ending of the season has been shown to us in the opening credits every week for 10 weeks, which is about creating a Picard synthetic, right? Like if you watch the credits now, that's obviously what's happening, right? And we were all trying to, we all just thought it was, you know, a metaphor. It's a metaphor for Data, and you know, no, it's not.
I just watched the Babylon 5 episode with Neil Gaiman. Will she sells like Paul the station to Bakil space for the Day of the Dead?
Yeah.
And at the end of the episode, she was like, I thought it was a metaphor. And he's like, showed him tones all and goes to Captain Lockley, maybe be more literal minded in the future.
Right.
And the opening credits sort of just remind me of, oh no, this is a literal construction of Bacon. I thought it was a metaphorical construction of Bacon having been broken.
Yeah.
And then coming to a place where he can't affect change.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it was like a Locutus of Borg thing. Like, there's a million different ways that we could have read it. And I admire the writing chutzpah of putting your season finale in the opening credits and just not telling anyone until it pays off.
Yeah.
What about...
So for me...
Yeah.
I'm not happy.
You're not happy.
No.
No.
I personally would have liked to have had been the... Because, again, technically speaking, he didn't actually die by sacrificing himself. He died by a brain aneurysm.
Right. Yeah?
It wasn't like he was blown up by the Romulans. So I would have liked for him to have attempted to do like risk his life, and Soji kind of sees that and decides to shut the thing down because of the attempt. But I just think the idea of killing him in season one, I would have preferred it to have been the event of the last ever season. If we get three seasons, Picard's death should have been the last episode of season three. And it's like, there we go. Just kind of like Data's was this time around. We're done. This is it. Picard's gone. We're finished. Now it's kind of like, well, we've seen him die once before.
So I have a rebuttal aid.
Okay.
Because I struggled with this too. I struggled with this long and hard, watching Picard die, going through all. Like, I'm the guy who, when I pop in Wrath of Khan, I still cry that Spock dies. Like, I know for a fact Spock's coming back in the next movie. I know for a fact that there was a shit ton of Spock after that. But I will still just bawl whenever I put on Wrath of Khan. And that's because the emotions that are affecting, for me, land very homely. So when we were watching the episode, and the cynic writer in me is like, this is like 10 minutes. It's barely an inconvenience. It's 10 minutes. We're gonna have a Picard somewhere in the Golem. Just wait it out. There was an episode in season two. I don't know why Next Generation season two is getting a lot
of... It does seem to get a lot of tread work, yeah.
Yeah. There was an episode in season two called Will Silence Has No Lease. And in the episode, Picard is confronted. They're exploring like a dark matter nebula or some nonsense. And they're confronted by Nagilum, who's this giant sort of like reptilian space head that's all powerful and is like killing the crew off. And Picard's in his corners, and Nagilum manifests himself as Troy and Data. And Data goes to Picard and goes, explain to me death. Like, what is death? And Picard just kind of sits there and goes, well, those two thoughts. And I'm paraphrasing because I'm not Patrick Stewart, so I'm not even going to read the lines. But those two thoughts. And the one thought is he talks about heaven and how you're recreated into another personage and you're unchanging, you're everlasting, you get the pleasure and whatnot. And the other thought is you just vanish, you go away. And Data goes, well, which thought do you subscribe to? And this is Data as Nagilum. And Picard goes, well, if you take in the complexity of space and time and the intricate balance between powers and whatnot, I think there's something in between. Now, Picard has died both ways. He's had both things happen to him. He's had himself go away in the arms of all his, you know, his Motley Crue. He comments on it to Data, like something just, you know, I just kind of went away, like a sandcastle being washed by the ocean.
Yeah.
And then he's reborn into this, not battle body, like into, no, it is a battle body because he doesn't have the Hulk condition. He doesn't have the brain, can't, you know, the brain aneurysm going on. And he has a new lease on life, right? So he experiences both of them. I think season two of Picard has to explore the liminal space that Picard alludes to with that line from Will Simon called the lease. So there has to be something more. And that's why I think they had to go get Guinan. And that's why I think John Delancey will show up in Q in some way to challenge Picard on a metaphysical level.
See, I was just about to say, would when we've effectively saved Picard by a robot thing, I was really hoping that when they were meeting in the room, it would be like you'd hear a voiceover from Q just go, Picard, you're too interested to die now, and him bringing him back, because it's literally exactly the same thing. They've given him a new body. It's not got the anything wrong with him, and he's technically died. So Q doing it or technology doing it would have been the same thing. I would have loved that to be the better way.
It's not the same thing because we have not seen Q. There has been no hint of Q.
Oh no, true.
If Q arrived in the last 30 seconds to save Picard, the rest of us would go. The rest of us would call bullshit, right?
Well, I'm off calling that anyway, so that's the problem.
No, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, right? So the last time we saw the Q was in Voyager, and they were fighting a civil war between what they were going to do in terms of. What does mortality look like to Q? Because they allowed the one Q to commit suicide, and that changed the whole continuum to the point where they were doing a Civil War reenactment with Janeway so that she could understand what was happening. So we don't know what the continuum looks like post that moment in time. Like, the continuum could look drastically different. Like, we don't know what Q is now.
Right.
And
right.
I think season two sort of has to address that because it's like, you've done the Borg. You've done Data. You've done it very well. Those things are in the box now. You kind of have to look at the rest of Next Generation and be like, what are the other big stories of Picard's life?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the irony being is you say we've done the Borg. Technically speaking, this season had nothing to do with the Borg whatsoever, apart from it being set on the Borg cube. There's no Borg, there's no resurgence of the Borg Queen. The artificial life form does not tie to the Borg. Literally, it was just a starting area to bring people to kind of like shoot, you know, giant block shaped objects into planets.
The Borg have to be a factor because we still have Hugh's plot for season two.
Yes,
to pick up where Picard becomes a spokesman for the XBs and tries to help the Borg. The XBs recover and integrate into a Federation society.
And this is where I think that the cutting room floor did not do them justice, because the opening line of this episode is Eleanor saying, I think the XBs should commit suicide because they have no home. And then we as an audience, outside of Michael Chabon's comments on the Twiddle, are left with, well, they still don't have a home. Like, we needed to have seen an XB and Arcana, you know, the android twin that survived, like hugging each other insurrection style. Just be like, okay, they have a home now. That plot thread is done. Because I kind of feel like the writing staff is done with that.
Yeah.
The audience is not, because we didn't see that.
Yeah, there was apparently a scene that was either written or filmed but didn't make it into the episode that established that the Borg, the XBs, and the synthetics on Capellia were sort of bonding. That Capellia might be their new home, and that the XBs would settle there. Led by Anti. I forget her name.
Ramada?
Yeah.
Ramada Ann.
Yeah.
And I would have swapped out the line for Soji saying, well, and the Federation has lifted the ban from the synthetics to say, well, at least we've got somewhere for the Borg to live. That would have been a better line to put in, because then we can pursue that. We didn't need to know that. We could either pursue that in season two, or in season two, it could just be made obvious that they're back into society.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with Aid on the point that is a resolution that's way too quick.
Yeah.
Like, even in Star Trek Insurrection,
right?
Bacall's comment is that he has at least slowed down the wheels of progress so that they can have a discussion as to what to do with the Baku situation.
Yes.
Now, as an audience, we're never revisiting Baku. They're never going to do the awful thing that they were planning to do. Bacall would shame them, but it wasn't resolved then because it's too much condensation of time.
What I thought about this a little bit, because I thought, okay, well, why did the Federation do this? If it's been established that the ban on synthetics has been lifted, the Federation must know that the Romulans took control of the synthetics and caused the Mars disaster. Mm-hmm. They must somehow know that. And I decided that O left a note. Because the way she sees it, like, I'm off to save the galaxy. Either I'm going to save the galaxy and everything I've done is going to be proven correct, or we're all going to die and it's not going to matter.
You're counting on Romulan and hubris.
So what I think, exactly. And also Vulcan logic, because she was like, look, this everything I did is totally vindicated. As Aide said, I was right. I was like, I was right. So I bet she basically left all of the evidence so that everybody could see in Starfleet, like, this is exactly what I did. I took over the synthetics. I've done all of this so that I could save the galaxy, and you're going to call me a hero when I get back from this planet, right? And then it all fails, and she has to go back to the Romulan Empire in disgrace, but the evidence is all there, and so that's why the Federation knows what happened. But I'm totally inventing that. I'm pulling that.
Yeah, there's nothing in the text to support that. It's a good theory. I like it.
But we have to find out what happened. And I agree. I think it was resolved too quickly.
If it was, though, now discussing lifting the ban. Like,
yeah. Yes.
Like the Federation Council was meeting to discuss lifting the ban.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah.
But like, again, like I said before,
I think, Aide, the more you talk about it, the more I'm like, yeah, that's a little too season one, Next Generation wrap up. Like, that's a little too clean.
And the worst thing is, it's like they were proved right. They were trying to summon a joint killer robot. So it's like, it's nuts. But the other thing, obviously, is the Narek's sister.
Yes.
Okay. Now she got kicked down a Borg shaft of darkness.
The show clearly wants us to think she is dead.
Yeah, she's got a teleporter. Just put it out there. We've seen that twice. She's got a teleporter. She's out.
Yeah. A site to site teleporter in the last episode.
No. Okay. I want to go back to like episode 2 or 3. When was Elnor introduced?
Elnor was introduced in episode 4.
Okay. I want to go back to episode 4. Because the biggest fake out of this entire season is our belief that Elnor is Narek's brother.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting for that to drop this episode. Didn't happen.
And they were face to face talking to each other and there was nothing. So I have to presume that was a giant red herring.
Yeah, I did. Because the brother was introduced like the very first thing Narek says to Soji in episode 1.
Yeah.
Like, before they even introduce the Borg cube, like they don't even pull out the camera yet. You have no idea where you're at.
Yeah.
You're in this confusing space, and the only thing you have to latch onto is, I had a brother once.
Yeah, and the other thing
blissfully says that. Like,
yeah.
Like, I've got this awful sister I hate. She hates me. We kind of have sexual tension because maybe Romulans don't have the incest ban or the incest taboo. And then you pan out. And there's a ball cube, and like the only human moment is this admission that I had a brother once.
Yeah.
And where is it? Like,
yeah.
And as my wife pointed out, Elnor has no home. He still has no home.
Yeah.
He can't go back to that planet because he's male. Like, he doesn't fit in their society.
Well, he can go back to the planet. He can go back to Romulan society, but he can't really rejoin his order, right? Yeah. He needs a new cause. He's done his job on Picard.
Mm-hmm.
Picard's accomplished his mission. He died, but you know, he came back. He got better. And by the way, you guys who are saying you really think that Picard should be dying in the last episode of season 3, you realize you could still get your wish.
Yeah.
I still
believe that that's going to be how this show ends.
Yeah.
I would just like him to die once rather than twice.
Right.
Like, the difference is, like, okay, so the fundamental difference is we have Spock, right?
Yes.
Like, we have to sort of go back to Spock.
You know, we were almost out of this conversation, and then I looped us back in. I'm sorry.
Almost out. But we'll go back. Like, so Spock died, was resurrected, came back, had a whole bunch of adventures, and 30 years pass, and then we get Star Trek Beyond, and there's the admission that Spock died in the Kelvin universe. And that is, like, new Spock's whole story is based on that.
Yeah.
But that's a wide swath of time in continuity. It's a wide swath of time for the audience to the point where, oh, Leonard Nimoy's dead, and this movie is going to address it. Whereas when Picard dies 2 years from now in 2021, or 2022, it's only been, like, to A's point, it's only been for us 2 years.
I actually think he will not die. I think they will keep the character alive now until Patrick Stewart dies.
Oh, okay. You think they're going to use that?
Yeah, I don't think they'll kill the character for the exact reason you said. Like, because they've done it already. They've done that trick, so they can't do it again. Did either of you ever read John Byrne's Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
He kills Wonder Woman twice in 3 issues.
It's true. He does.
And that was when I quit the book. I was like, Byrne, I have stuck with you through so much bullshit. But
I want that to be on his tombstone when he dies. Well, yeah. I stuck with you through so much bullshit, because it's true. You can't be a John Byrne fan and not go through some shit.
But it was like, what? Again? Like, it loses. So I hear what you're saying. I do. And I think that's why they won't do it. I don't think they'll kill him again.
For me, it depends on execution. Like, if you told me before the show started that Bacall was going to euthanize Data, I would have been so angry. I would not have watched the show, maybe. I would have watched the show, but I would have been angry about it.
Yes.
But the way they handle it and the way they deal with it is such honest emotion. And it's clear that Shaban is walking through his recent passing with his father in these scenes. Yes. Like, it's like the writer is just bleeding on the page.
Well, that's, yeah, right. It's a death of Captain Marvel, Jim Starlin.
Yes. Yeah.
And that execution and the way they do it with such dignity and grace get me through the idea of, oh, we're finally going to say a proper goodbye to Data, as opposed to Data points Phasal, blows up ship, we never see him again.
Right, yeah.
So for me, it's all in the execution. Like, because you can sum up any story and make it sound trivial. Like, right. Rocket One, some guy comes back, his wife's dead, he kills this guy's best friend, the end.
All right, so let's talk about the characters whose loose ends we have not yet discussed, and that is Jurati. So, go to prison?
You and your Jurati agenda.
Jurati go to prison?
No, I don't think she's going to go to prison. I think we're going to say extenuating circumstances. She went through a traumatic event. She was acting out. She's taking ownership of it.
I guess it's temporary insanity.
Yeah, temporary insanity is going to be like the plea, and that no one can comprehend this information, and then she gets off.
Well, again, even the idea of, like, her killing Maddox, it's like, okay, you killed Maddox. Oh, you killed the guy that built the homicidal androids. Okay, there off you go then. So again, it's just how you kind of frame it. It's weird, yeah.
I don't think she goes to prison.
All right. And it looks like she and Rios are still in a relationship. Have they had a thing? Who else have we have? What about Rios? What's Rios's move now?
Well, okay, so we're getting to kind of what I'm thinking about the whole thesis statement of the show is, which there's a Bible verse, and I hate to pull this out, but it's Proverbs 27:17.
Yes.
And iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another.
Okay.
And I think we've seen that with all of the characters, not just sharpening Picard, because right. Picard had to be at a very specific headspace where he allows someone else to make the choice, right? Like, the whole season is about how Picard has to go on this mission. This is his chance for redemption. And then when it's taken away from him in the previous episode, he realizes, oh, I've been going about this the wrong way. it's not about what I choose. It's what they need to choose.
Yeah.
And I can help inspire that.
Yeah.
So Picard, the entire time that he's been with Rios, he's been sharpening Rios to get him to be able to accept that, yeah, Starfleet failed your captain, but your captain failed you by doing by executing the two people and then executing himself.
Right, right.
Like, he failed you. Like, that was his failing as a human being. Just as Picard failed the Romulans and Picard failed himself when he quit Starfleet because it became harder.
It became
more difficult.
I thought it was very smart of Picard to do what you're describing, which is the way that, like, he could have said, Soji, you have to shut down the probe.
Yeah. Right?
You have to do this. But he didn't. He framed it as a choice because that was her big problem, was like, look, I never get to decide anything. All I'm doing is what I'm programmed to do. All I'm doing is what everybody else tells me to do. And so he's like, no, actually. And this is a plot for us, a theme for us too, right? Because every day in our life, we have these choices. We could make other people's lives miserable if we wanted to. Like, we have, any one of us could do this, right? Like, we have the capacity to be really terrible people. and we're given the choice to not do that. Like, you can be a good person or you can not be a good person. And he framed it that way so that it gave her what she needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And it helped her understand that she is empowered. She's not just reacting. She does have choice. And we all have choice, even though it seems like many times we don't. We do, even if that choice is just how I choose to comport myself in very difficult circumstances.
I think that's one of the reasons why this show is now free. Because I think that CBS wants to communicate that message.
Maybe.
Can you continue for a second?
I'll explain much the end of my point.
I was going to say, do we actually need all of the characters back for season two?
That's a very good point.
The only Soji and Picard we need. Is that it? Because the idea you rescue Soji and don't use her, that's crazy. Everyone else could literally just fly off and it'd be like, okay, we carry on and do something different now.
Well, the hardest person to keep is going to be Seven, because she can command a bigger salary than anybody except Patrick Stewart.
That's true.
So yeah. She's going to be the money. And this is actually on in the Q&A that Shaban made. Somebody said, you got to bring back Seven. He's like, I keep telling them that, but I'm not sure they're listening. So
yeah.
He wants to bring back Seven, but I think that there might be a budget issue. Now, the rest of the cast, however, they're cheap, I expect.
Well, they're not legacy characters.
By the plots they've got hanging, okay?
Yeah.
So, again, Raffi, we've got her son. That's something you can build upon, okay? Rios, technically speaking, his arc's been done. He's done his thing. He's kind of redeeming himself for his failings to his captain.
But he's the pilot.
But can't we just have another pilot? Do we need him again?
Why reinvent the wheel? If you've got a good character.
He is a really good character. And the idea he's got all the holograms. I mean, are we going to see less holograms? Now he's kind of like not isolating himself from society so much. He's now actually becoming a more whole person. Does he start getting more crew members in and the holograms disappear?
Yeah. Why Picard did not summon an entire crew of Rioses when he could not fly the ship right? Like, I don't know. But
that's a good point. Yeah. but it's just, I mean, like we said about Raffi and Seven, the idea that they kind of go, they put that in there and they go, well, we don't even know if Seven's coming back. Well, then why do it with Seven? Why not introduce that as another character plot for her, like you're in season two?
Yeah.
For me, Aid, to your point is, like, Seven can have, like, Seven's a bigger character because she's not holistically defined by Picard season one. All of these characters that we're dealing with are so defined by Picard season one. Like, I can see Raffi continuing on with the show. I think Raffi is an important thing. It gives Picard someone, it gives him a number one, right?
Yes.
That predates season one, right? Like Horn and Elnor, the reason why those two are holding each other and comforting each other, it's because they knew Picard the longest. Everyone else is like, we've known him since Tuesday.
Well, and Raffi's
got on all skin too.
Raffi's got this great Mama Raffi kind of vibe thing going, where she's
realistically, the show needs Raffi.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important for representation issues, because Star Trek can lean heavily white male.
Yeah.
And I think we need to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be an inclusive vision of the future.
Yeah.
Like if Rios and Girardi decide to just go off on their own, and it becomes like a Klingon thing, and it's Worf coming back or some other character coming back, like I can easily see them being like, Rios isn't there anymore, because the thing that defined Rios has been completely taken care of.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. You're going to get the entire cast. Nobody's leaving the show except maybe Seven, and even then she'll just be a recurring character.
Yeah, and again, she was only a recurring character in this show too. She's only in three episodes.
Three episodes, yeah, yeah.
I think Eleanor stays around. I think Eleanor stays around. I don't think that season two picks up like Last Jedi style, where we pick up 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna have a band gets back together necessarily sequence. Yeah. Like Picard has to go reconnect with everyone.
Right.
I don't know where Picard, like, we don't know where he laid a cult to.
Correct.
It's as vague as cult's motion picture that way.
Yeah.
You know, with the waving of the hand. Like, we have no idea where they're heading off to. And I kind of like that, because it's very Next Generation.
It's a new adventure. Like, they're going to go have some other new adventure. There'll be some new intergalactic crisis. And Picard will have to go save the universe with his gang of plucky youngsters. It's going to be great.
I'm really hoping for Klingons, though. I'm always hoping for Klingons.
Yeah. I like the entire crew. There's not a single person in the crew I would not say, oh, well, we can do without them. I just think plot-wise, I mean, like I say, they're not like a Starfleet crew, so they can easily just disband at a drop of a hat. It's signed to that ship. So it just seems to be like, okay, if we lost that character, right, like, I mean, like Jirai, okay, Jirai, you've done your thing. I mean, the idea is she's not going to be involved in like the new android situation on Earth. But instead you're going to be flying around space. It's like, okay, you can kind of see that would be a possibility, and she would be missed, because I actually really like the actress as well. I think she's fantastic. I'd be interested to see what they do with it next. Like I say, there's not really that lingering kind of plot points. It's like, we really need to resolve this, because it's kind of like, it's kind of tied it well.
But in the sense of a Star Trek bridge crew, she's the doctor.
Yes.
Like, you know, she's got a role. You got
it it depends how the writers of season two approach it. If they approach it plot first and everything comes out of plot, which is sort of how New Trek has situated itself.
Yeah.
Like, when they started writing, they had no intention of bringing in Riker. Riker and Troy were not going to be used. The only person they had contact was Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner. Okay. And they got to a point in the writing process where they're like, we need to move Picard emotionally speaking. And they sat there in the room and someone said, it has to be Riker and Troy.
Okay.
So if they approach it from plot first, we may not see these characters. If they approach it from character first, where the characters are more invested and entwined, we may see these characters, maybe not necessarily in the roles that they're solving on the family shot, because that's the only time we get the family shot, right?
Yeah.
Is that last shot before we engage.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be necessarily that Bacall and company go to the next adventure right away.
Yeah.
But it may be like, Picard has to go back to Earth to do a debriefing, and Elnor's with him.
Yeah.
But Girardi and Rios are over here, and Seven's doing this. Like, it may be something wider than that.
Okay, does the plot have to be another universe-ending threat, or can we just have something? Because, again, this is the problem with Doctor Who. As soon as you start doing four seasons worth of universe-ending threats, the idea you're saving, like Tom Baker, Horror Fang Rock, the idea you're saving five guys on a lighthouse just seems insignificant. You could do stuff with Rios's past, stuff, something that happens between his leaving Starfleet and him, and now, where he's in it. Or Raffi's past, she's obviously, you can't believe she just sat on that planet and nobody interacted with her whatsoever. Yeah. So something, some kind of cross-section of like, okay, that guy's popped up from my past. I just really don't want it to be like, oh, there's another intergalactic threat.
Yeah,
because that just gets to be, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
That's the, sort of the problem with New Trek is it's always been, at least the Kurtzman era, the stakes are always so big.
Yeah.
So that when you say the five people in the lighthouse don't matter, like for me, as a Star Trek fan, I'm like, no, those five people matter. Like we need to go, we need to save them. We need to figure out how we're going to techno babble our way out of the solution. And I don't think that that's a very, I think that's a very Trek mindset. Like I want them to do something where it's not end of the universe stakes. Like if the crew doesn't do X, Y happens and everyone dies.
Because they always made a point of Trek in Trek. They always made a point of like these thousand crew ships. Like, oh, we lost 100 people because it actually supposed to mean something. They were 100 people. They were actually lives. And the idea it's like that we can scale it back so that every life does actually mean something. It doesn't have to be, it can be just about saving the crew, saving somebody's, like say a link to somebody's past where they're saving those individuals. It doesn't have to be a universal threat.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I think that they need to make it personal. Or I should say keep it personal because this season has been pretty personal, but it's also pretty high stakes.
Yeah, and everything that was personal in this season has gotten enough closure that if it doesn't show up in season two, I don't think necessarily – like, yes, we're losing the cast member, we're losing the chemistry, but I don't necessarily think we're losing narrative thrust.
I want to know what happened to Beverly.
Yeah,
yes,
right?
That's true, yes.
That's my season two question. Where the fuck is Beverly?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we have gone over an hour.
I'm sure we have.
so thank you to everyone who has been following us all season long. If you have been, we've slowly been building our audience, and it's been wonderful. And Jim and Aide, I have learned so much. Like, you two are fantastic. I learned so much about this show that I had no idea. And I am in awe of your Trekitude. So we have been talking off camera about what we want to do next. We've thrown some ideas around about possibly continuing Space Force while we wait for another season of something. Discovery's coming, but we'll have to.
I still love the trailer at the beginning of like, don't cancel your subscription.
Yeah. Or do we want to talk about the films, or do we want to talk about something else? So listen, reach out to us. Like, post a comment on the video on YouTube, or reach out to us on Twitter. I'm Dr. Comics, all spelled out. Jim is Jim Seal 1701. Aide, tell us yours.
I can't remember what mine is.
It's Monkey something or another.
It might be Monkey X, because
Monkey X. Anyway. Right, reach out to us and tell us what you would like to see. If we do requests, we pander. So
because everybody knows they want to hear Jim's Generations storytelling fun. So
I know I. Yeah.
Oh, wait, there was one thing, but really quick. I know we're wrapping it up. I'm sorry. The one thing I had to have.
You get the last word, Jim.
After Kulk dies in Generations, the very first thing we see after that is Picard on a mountaintop. After Picard dies, the very first thing we see is a mountaintop. I don't think that's unintentional.
It's a callback.
Yeah, it's definitely a callback that when it happened, I was like, oh, this is the same. This is the emotional distant shot.
Well, we will get back to Generations. That sounds like a Generation.
Okay, apparently we're going back.
Thanks again, everybody, and stay safe out there.